Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Oregon is home to one of the nation's largest industrial-scale dairy operations. Located near Boardman, Three Mile Canyon Farms houses 70,000 cows and is a major source of ammonia and other pollution emissions. Now, despite unprecedented public opposition, another large industrial dairy operation called Lost Valley Farm is coming to the gorge, not that far from Three Mile Canyon Farms. This morning, we talk with Kendra Kimborauskas, who's the Chief Executive Officer for the Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, about the environmental and public health concerns raised by mega dairies and how the Oregon legislature can pass legislation that would end unchecked pollution from these dairies. Kendra, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, until a number of years ago, I had no idea that Oregon even had any industrial-scale dairies, or as they're known, CAFOs, confined animal feed operations. And I first learned about Three Mile Canyon and how huge it was. But when I was reading some of the papers that you and Columbia Riverkeeper sent me about the CAFOs in Oregon, I realized that there's 25 already in Oregon, and there seem to be no controls over them growing. So why is it that there are so many and that so few people know about them?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. So first off, when we're talking about CAFOs, I use the acronym CAFO, but it's a concentrated animal feeding operation. And that's an important distinction from how the state defines a CAFO, which is a confined animal feeding operation. A confined animal feeding operation is the name that the state gives pretty much any facility in Oregon that confines their animals for 45 days or more. And that's regardless of the size of the operation. So you could have somebody that has a couple of goats, but because of the nature of the weather, they have to keep their animals inside. And in accordance with state law, that they would have to have a permit. These facilities are not of concern to us. The facilities that are of concern are concentrated animal feeding operations. Unfortunately, the same acronym, CAFO. But these facilities are regulated under EPA. So the EPA basically sets standards that if you reach a certain threshold of animals, then you are supposed to get a permit. And this is a larger threshold. So for cows, for example, this is about 700 dairy cows, 2,500 pigs, 33,000 plus chickens. And then the most recent facilities that we're seeing coming into the state with Three Mile Canyon Farms and the Lost Valley Ranch out in eastern Oregon, this sort of goes above and beyond what we've seen before. We're talking about 70,000 cows, 30,000 cows. So there are a number of facilities in the state that do trigger that large-scale feeding operation, the CAFO, according to EPA. Not only do we have these large-scale dairy operations, but we also have some beef feedlots. At the Three Mile Canyon Farms complex, there's another, Beef Northwest has a feedlot where they have tens of thousands of cows out there. We also have chicken farms in the state. We've got Foster Farms that confines chickens, and then we have egg laying operations. So Willamette Valley Eggs is a quite a large egg laying concentrated animal feeding operation here in the valley.
So what is the concern about the kind of pollution that they emit? I understand that one of the worst polluters that creates the haze in the gorge during the winter is, in fact, Three Mile Canyon, in that it's probably up there with Boardman coal-fired plant in terms of being a major source of pollution.
Sure. So when you the issue around pollution and concentrated animal feeding operations, and for just speaking, I'm going to call these factory farms. So factory farms are different than traditional farms because instead of the animals being outside on pasture, eating, urinating, defecating outside, the animals are brought inside what look like warehouses. And so most of the time the animals are in concrete. And so when you bring animals inside and you have to deal with their waste, you're going to have certain issues. And therein lies the issues with these factory farms is that now what we've done is we've taken all the animals off the land, we've confined them into these buildings, and as a result, we have to manage their waste. And the management of the waste is the source of the problem. And so depending on the different species that you're talking about, you're going to have a different set of challenges. But since we're talking about these mega dairies on the eastern side of the state, I'll focus on that. The barns are basically the cows defecate and urinate in the barns, and the barns are then flushed. And so all of that manure is flushed into these open air, what they call lagoons, but they're not lagoons like we would picture lagoons being. They're basically open air cesspools. And the waste is left to decompose in these giant open air pits until it can be spread onto the field. So if you're thinking about a city, and these facilities produce just as much waste as cities in the state, we would never, ever consider leaving a bunch of human waste to decompose in an open area. It would be considered a public health risk. But because these are considered agricultural operations, this is an approved way of handling the waste. And so when you have animal waste decomposing, the decomposing aspect results in at least 160 toxic gases, so the off gas off this decomposing waste. And one of those gases there's five gases that are of major concern. There's hydrogen sulfide, there's ammonia, there's carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and I'm missing the fifth one. But ammonia is the gas that has been pinpointed at Three Mile Canyon Farms as being a major contributor to acid haze and rain at the eastern end of the gorge.
Actually, I'll throw out the other ones. It's volatile organic compounds and particulate matter. And you also list on this, and this is the white paper I picked up from Columbia River Keeper. Also, odors is another one of the pollutants. And I'm wondering, is odors a separate category from these other noxious pollutants which also have horrible odors? Or is odors just kind of a generalization?
Odors is a generalization. Odors is sort of a quality of life issue for people who are having to live next to these operations. But, you know, by and large, the concern isn't so much about the aesthetics of manure. It's about the gases that come from decomposing manure that can make people very sick.
Well, in fact, like ammonia and hydrogen sulfide are lethal if you inhale enough of them. So I guess the question comes then, why aren't these emissions being controlled by the state?
Well, that too is a very good question, Barbara. Back in 2007, there was a piece of legislation. At the time, it was called Senate Bill 235, which basically brought the state of Oregon into compliance with federal clean air rules. Prior to that, the state basically across the board exempted agriculture from having to comply with air rules. And that was a problem. And EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, came in and said, you can't just broadly exempt an industry from the air rules. Well, it was like that because we didn't really have any facilities in the state that would trigger some of the rules and regulations with the Clean Air Act. And so after 2000, when Three Mile Canyon Farms came in, totally changed the landscape of the type of facilities we were seeing in the state and, as a result, the type of air pollution. Well, Senate Bill 235 worked to bring the state into compliance with those federal rules. And unfortunately, there was a major pushback from the industry, but the bill did pass, which gave the state the authority to address air issues related to these mega farms, but instead of moving forward and actually adopting rules, there was a task force that was set up. And the task force, and I sat on the task force, met for about 8 months, and we came up with a fairly decent package recommendation for the legislature of how they could move forward with a rulemaking process and what that could look like to bring these facilities under some sort of a regulatory system. Well, that was 10 years ago, and unfortunately, up until now, nothing has happened. And despite the fact that the state agencies have the authority, we believe that they have the authority to regulate these massive operations, there's been a lack of political will to do so.
Well, in a few moments, we're going to find out why there's that lack of political will and what people are doing now to try to change that. But for a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Will and Ken, yes, who are in Pledge Central to give us an update on what's happening with our pledge drive. We've been talking with Kendra Kimberaskis, who's the Chief Executive Officer for Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and we're talking today about CAFOs. So, hi guys, and how can supporting KABU actually help us to maybe take a better look at the fact that we have all these confined animal operation, feed operations, and concentrated animal feed operations around the state.
Well, if it wasn't for KABU, you wouldn't be able to hear Barbara Bernstein. So that's why you need to pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU. And this is a very important issue, and it's a local issue, and it's about pollution. It's about the air we breathe, the water we consume. And Barbara works very hard on the show. I've known Barbara for a long time, and I know how hard she works on this show every week. And it's amazing the guests she gets on, and we wouldn't have this show if it wasn't for KABU and it wasn't for Barbara Bernstein's hard work. So you can show your appreciation and your support of KABU by picking up the phone, dialing 877-500-5266, or you can donate online at kboo.fm. Super easy, super convenient way to donate your money. And that way you will be facilitating this radio station for another 50 years. 50 years almost of KABU Radio, and 50 more to come. Thanks to you folks by dialing 877-500-5266. Or as I've said before, you're welcome to come on down to the radio station. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just off Burnside. Beautiful mural out front, easy to find. Come on in, drop off your donation, or become a volunteer, whatever time you can afford or whatever finances you can afford. We have some great gifts available. We have the Greg Palast books. We have the Greg Palast book and DVD, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Plus the, what is it, Ken? Billionaires, Ballots, and
Oh, yeah, there's we have two offers for Greg Palast, actually, Will. We have Billionaires and Bandits, How to Steal an Election in Nine Easy Steps by Greg. And that's for a $60 minimum pledge, $5 a month. And our volunteers can set you up with a credit card, debit card, bank account, EFT. And also, Will, you mentioned the other offer, Best Democracy Money Can Buy. That's the book, which is updated. I know he came out with a version about 10 years or so ago. There's a lot more new information coming in thanks to our last election in November. And the DVD, the documentary, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Greg was actually on KABU at around 8 o'clock this morning talking about that. That's for a $120 minimum pledge, $10 a month. But Will mentioned 50-year anniversary next year. We started in 1968. The station runs 67% of our operating budget depends on you, the listener, and then the passion of programmers like Barbara, who does Locus Focus. So give us a call now, 877-500-5266, or online at kabu.fm. And as Will mentioned, you can come down to the station. You can take a tour. You can become a volunteer, actually. Ani, our volunteer coordinator, has an orientation every once a month. So come on down. We'll guide you through all that. 877-500-5266. Now back to Barbara and Locus Focus.
Well, thanks, Ken, and thanks, Will, and we'll talk to you soon. We're talking this morning with Kendra Kimberauskas, who's the Chief Executive Officer for Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and we're talking about the rise of CAFOs, which are concentrated animal feed operations throughout mostly the east side of Oregon. Kendra, I think it was about 12 years ago when we first met, and you were then with Friends of Family Farmers, and you were talking about CAFOs back then and the concern. That was one of the things that Friends of Family Farmers was working on very hard, was to prevent all these CAFOs from coming into the state. So that was back in the mid-aughts. What happened since then that there's been such an increase?
Yeah, so that was a long time ago. It's hard to believe we've been talking about this issue for 12 years, Barbara. I think there's a few different factors that are leading to the increase in new facilities coming into the state. For the dairy operations on the eastern side of the state, for example, Three Mile Canyon Farms, when it came in 2000, it really built the infrastructure that was needed to not only produce milk, but get the milk to the cheese company there in Boardman, and then get the cheese packed and off and out to stores both in the U.S. and abroad. Now that that infrastructure has been put into place, and that there is an increasing demand internationally for cheap cheese, the local infrastructure has been put in place, and so it makes sense for more facilities to come and follow the footsteps of Three Mile Canyon Farm to get cheese production up and running.
Well, about, yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking about 15 years ago, I was having lunch in Baker City and I was reading the local newspaper and I was reading about this effort that Baker City and Baker County was doing to bring the Tillamook, to contract with Tillamook Dairy to build a big concentrated operation there in Baker County to produce milk that would be turned into Tillamook cheese. And so there are two things that struck me as being very odd. First of all, I thought of Tillamook as being this very local dairy in Tillamook County and having all these happy cows pasturing on grass. And I also thought it was very odd to be having dairies in the desert. So I think that, and I was pretty naive about a lot of this stuff. I hadn't read Michael Pollan's article yet about CAFOs, so I really didn't even know what they were. So what was kind of at play at that time when, and I guess that Baker County lost out, they didn't get the Tillamook Dairy at that point, though I'm not sure if they have one out there now. Why is it that, Tillamook was looking for places to produce milk for them in the desert parts of Oregon?
Right. Well, I first and foremost, where Tillamook got its start in Tillamook County, as you know, and as your listeners know, it's a very wet area. So there is lots of grass, but you know there are several rivers and creeks that end up running into estuaries that run into the ocean. And so that particular place in Oregon is not suitable for producing a lot of milk with a lot of cows. I mean, we have a lot of cows out there, but I think most people would say that we've sort of maxed out the number of cows that we could have pasturing in Tillamook County. And even in confinement, the facilities that are out there that confine their cows, they're constantly dealing with a high water table, which when manure gets into water, there's a problem. So I think that because there's sort of two factors here, there's a reason, you know, if you go to Walmart and you see Tillamook cheese on the shelf, that milk has to come from somewhere, and it can't, because of the mass production of that particular cheese, the cows that were the Tillamook Creamery Association could not produce the amount of milk needed to get a block of Tillamook cheese in every Walmart in this country. And so there was the need for a bigger supply to meet the demand, and then coupled with the fact that Tillamook County could not support that many cows because of the water table, that the arid regions of Oregon started looking very attractive. And so once the cheese factory was built in Boardman, and then the facilities, Three Mile Canyon Farm and now Lost Valley Ranch, are out in the desert, certainly you're not going to have the same kinds of issues that you would see in Tillamook County, for example, with water or with manure runoff getting into waterways. But now you're dealing with an entirely different set of problems, which include the potential for manure to get into the groundwater, and also in an arid area where you have high rates of evaporation. That's where you're going to see a lot more. I don't know if it's more, but you're going to see a lot of increased evaporation, which results in increased ammonia and then these other gases that we talked about getting off-gassing into the air.
So if the cows that are pasturing in nice grassy pastures in Tillamook County, what are the emission levels from their waste products compared to cows that are being confined in desert areas inside?
So that's a good question, and I don't have sort of the numbers in front of me to share with you, but what I will say is when a cow is pastured, you're not going to have some of the same issues with having to deal with their waste, which means adding water to the waste in order to manage it. You are going to have similar, you know, methane. Methane comes from both the front and the back end of the cow as they're, you know, processing their food and ruminating and whatnot. But the crux of the issue is going to be in when you bring those animals off of pasture and you put them into confinement and now you have to manage their waste. And so that's where you're going to have the greatest amount of impact. I will also say that something to consider is that methane is a greenhouse gas, but when you're having your cows on pasture, if you're managing your pastures right, the pastures are going to be sequestering the carbon. So there's going to be some trade-off, whereas when those animals are brought inside and put on either a dirt pad or on concrete, You're not only managing the waste, which has the impact, but there's not going to be the kind of forage that's going to be grown to help sequester carbon in the local area.
Well, I see this really big disconnect. I mean, it's one of my problems always when I started learning about factory farms, industrial farming, that when you take the waste products of an animal and you separate them from the ground that the animal has traditionally lived on, that you're creating all kinds of problems, and you're also not, besides you're creating problems of waste, but you're also not nurturing the land. And I mean, I don't think there's any way that you could have, well, first of all, cows can't graze on desert, because a rancher in Utah told me many years ago, cows don't eat rocks, which he said was a surprise to some of the ranchers who were trying to raise cows in southern Utah. But and also the waste wouldn't go into the ground the same way in a dry landscape that it does in a wet landscape. It seems what would come down to it is that when you try to raise this many animals in such quantity, that you're going to have inherent problems that mean that this is really not a sustainable way to farm.
Absolutely. And that's the crux of the issue, is that animals were not intended to be confined in boxes or in warehouses. They were meant to live outdoors naturally. There was a system that was in place, and when we started to adjust the system, that's when we're going to be having the problems as a result.
So what, I guess the issue that I see then is maybe we shouldn't be having Tillamook cheese in every shelf in every Walmart around the world, and the Tillamook should go back to being a local brand like it was when I came to Oregon 45 years ago.
Right. Well, and the good news is that it sounds like Tillamook, I don't know that they're going to go back. They've made it to every shelf in Walmart in the United States, and they're actively seeking new markets abroad. But the good news is that there's a number of smaller creameries that are coming online that are really supporting local dairy farmers. And so for somebody who's, you know, trying to look at and making sure that their cheese choices are responsible, the good news in Oregon, and particularly in the metro area of Portland, we have a lot of choices. And we're going to be paying more, but we're going to be supporting a dairy farmer who is respectful of the land and respectful of the animals.
Well, we're talking this morning with Kendra Kimbarauskas, who's the Chief Executive Officer for Socially Responsible Agriculture Project. We're talking about concentrated animal facilities here in Oregon and the immense amount of pollution that they create and the hazard they are to air quality. We're going to stop for a moment talking about this and talk with Will and Ken about why you should support KBOO. When we come back, we're going to talk about what is being done, what the organization that Kendra works with, as well as a number of other environmental groups, are doing to change things so that there'll be more controls over the kinds of emissions that these facilities can emit here in Oregon. So we'll be back talking to you in just a moment, Kendra. Will and Ken, welcome. My mind is, I didn't get enough sleep last night, so I have these big gaps in my memory. Welcome to Locus Focus yourself.
Oh, thanks, Barbara. I'm Kendra without the draw. but thanks to both of you. And this is the type of program you get on KBOO. They're talking about local issues, creameries in Oregon. Tillamook's gotten a little bit bigger, but Barbara remembers when they were a local creamery, a local dairy, one of our favorites. So that's the kind of program you're getting. This is our spring membership drive. I'm Ken. I'm with Will. It's time to give us a call, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. Will, we only have three more days, so the drive ends Wednesday at 10 o'clock. So if any listeners out there, if you've been on the fence, you've been waiting to donate, this is a perfect time at 877-500-5266.
That's right. No time to lose. You have to hurry to show your support for this wonderful radio station. And as Ken said, it's 877-500-5266. My name's Will without the triumph. And Ken is
Kendra without the draw.
Exactly. But we are volunteers here, and we believe so much in KBOO, and I know you folks do too out there. That's why you're listening. That's why you care about the issues that Barbara Bernstein is talking about. And these are very interesting issues because they affect our day-to-day lives. And that's what KBOO offers you folks. It's a community radio station, and you are part of the community. So you can pledge your support for the community in this wonderful city we live in, Portland, and by donating at 877-500-5266. But even if you don't live in Portland, even if you're listening online or streaming or doing whatever you need to do to listen to KBOO, you can still support this radio station because it's such a great resource for all this vital information and the great music shows. And it's put together by people who care. The staff members care about it, and the volunteers certainly do. And it's so important. And I really appreciate living in Portland. I've lived here since 93, and I've been listening to KBOO since then. And I know you folks out there feel the same way. That's why you're listening, and that's why you're going to pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266.
We're really run on the money that you give us as members, and also on the passion of our programmers, people like Barbara Bernstein, getting points of view and bits of information that you're not going to get anywhere else. Will mentioned listening on the air, but your money also pays for our website, and every single show on KBOO is actually archived there. I've listened to a lot of music shows that are on after midnight, and I've been in bed for maybe an hour or so. I've listened to them maybe the next day or a week later. A lot of interesting stuff goes on after midnight at KBOO till 6 a.m. And
right.
Also, it's a good way to catch up on some of the public affairs. If you're driving now, and you get to where you're going, work, and you can't hear the end of Barbara's show, you can go online and it's archived. You can listen anytime. You can download it. You can stream online. All of that depends on the money that members like you give KBOO. 67% of our operating budget comes from listeners. That's not true, of course, with any other station.
It's
not. There's corporate influence, government influence.
We are not supported by the Ford Foundation or the Koch brothers or...
Oh, wait, I thought the Koch brothers, at least, those cheap guys, they don't give any money to KBOO.
So. I don't think they're handing money over to us.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm just kidding. But really, it's very important. 877-500-5266. And, Will, as I mentioned, just three more days left in the drive.
Very few days. What's that, 72 hours?
Something like that. So 10 o'clock Wednesday night. Don't wait till 9:55
nope.
on Wednesday night. This is a perfect time to call. 877-500-5266.
Make it happen. Please, you're out there. You're listening. You love this radio station. You love the shows you listen to. It's so important. 877-500-5266.
Yeah, Will and I were talking just this morning. I was up at 7. I listened to Amy Goodman, as she's on every morning during the week on KBOO, 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. Greg Palast was on 8 to 9 when I was driving over here. He was talking about voter suppression, very interesting information about Florida when George W. Bush was elected. He was elected by 538 votes in Florida, and 74,000 votes were thrown away. Mostly from people who voted for Al Gore. So that's the kind of information you'll find out. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And now back to Barbara and Kendra and Locus Focus.
Thanks, Will, and thanks, Ken. And we'll be hearing from you again before the hour's up. We're talking this morning with Kendra Kimborowska, Chief Executive Officer for Socially Responsible Agriculture Project, and we're talking about concentrated animal facilities here in Oregon and what we can do to control them, if not get rid of them. So first of all, let's get into controlling. You talked about the Senate bill that was passed, 10 years ago, created a task force that you were on, and nothing happened. Why did nothing happen out of that?
Well, nothing happened from that bill. At the time that there was supposed to be, the recommendations of the report were supposed to be provided to the legislature, I believe in 2009, to sort of move the ball forward. And because we were in a budget crisis, nothing ever became of that. There was not the money to support putting into play an actual program to regulate emissions from large-scale dairy operations. And then since then, there has not been the political will to kind of pick it up and continue moving forward with it. So the report and all of the recommendations have sat on a shelf, basically collecting dust for the last 10 years. With the new mega dairy coming into the state, Lost Valley Ranch, there was definitely concern that we're seeing another Three Mile Canyon Farms-esque operation with still no controls on emissions from these facilities. And so there was a coalition of organizations that came together to try to pick up the ball and say, well, if we're going to be permitting these new operations, at the very least, we need to have an air program in place. And by the way, we have this, you know, these recommendations from the task force from back in the day. Why don't we just move forward with those recommendations? Unfortunately, the dairy industry, despite the fact that they had agreed to the program back in 2008, they came out vehemently opposed to any sort of new regulations in the state. And because of that, we were not able to pass the bill or move the bill forward. However, Senator Denbrough did make a commitment that he's going to be establishing a work group here over the summer to really kind of hone in on megadairies and their impact on the Columbia River Gorge. And maybe we'll get somewhere for the next legislative session.
Now, I recall that there was a similar problem going on in California about 10 years ago, where it was the same thing where the agricultural emissions, whether they were air or water emissions, were not regulated. And that's changed, hasn't it? And now Oregon's the only state in the West Coast that doesn't have any regulations controlling air pollution from agricultural operations.
Right. So what you're referring to was a bill in California. It was about 10 years ago, but what they were really trying to get at was the specific area where emissions from dairies kind of got trapped between two mountain ranges. And they were looking at methane. And they did put a program in place where they were regulating greenhouse gas emissions from large-scale operations. Idaho has a program as well where they are focused on ammonia, and I believe Washington State does as well. So, yes, so Oregon is sort of the only state with no regulations when it comes to these megadairies. And at this point in time, we now have two of the largest megadairies in the country here in our state.
Well, I find it kind of interesting. When I read Michael Pollan's famous article in the New York Times Magazine, I believe, and it was 2002, and he describes a confined or concentrated animal feed operation where he buys a steer and mm-hmm. follows it through its life cycle from growing up with its mother in a cow-calf operation to going off to a feedlot and finally being butchered. And he describes the conditions in that feedlot, which are just reprehensible. It sounded to me like Auschwitz for animals. And then a few months later, I was driving down I-5 in California through the valley, and suddenly I saw this blackened area. I thought it looked like it had been burned. And then I see all these unhappy cows cattle sitting and lying in this filth, and the stench, and you could smell it before you saw it. And it's the famous Harris Ranch, which I didn't know about, but I suddenly realized this is what Michael Pollan was talking about. And it was one of the most horrific experiences I've had driving through that. And I've driven past it several other times since, and you almost get used to it after a while. But the first time I drove through, it was really shocking. And then I got to realize this is what CAFO is all about. At that time, I had no idea that Fremont Canyon existed in Oregon. And I thought, well, here in Oregon, you know, we don't do these things. And it seems like that is part of why there's no regulation, because it's taken so long for Oregonians to realize that, in fact, yes, we are doing these things now.
Right. Well, that and the fact that, you know, there's Fremont Canyon Farms has two paid lobbyists in the Capitol. And so their lobbyists are there to do their bidding and get their policies that make it easier for them to do business in our state. And that, with the fact that the facility is located out of sight, it's out of mind for many Portlanders. It's 3 hours east of Portland, outside of Boardman. And so, you know, you might, if you're driving through the area at the right time of the day, you're not going to see anything, but you probably will smell something. And so, you know, it's one of those things where, yes, Oregonians don't realize that we have these types of operations in the state, and they're not seeing them or smelling them. So they do remain out of sight and out of mind.
So what can we as Oregonians do to, first of all, make sure that the regulations that you've been working on for 10 years become law? And then what is the next step beyond that is to how do we first of all, prevent further industrial agriculture from taking over the state?
Well, there's a couple of things that folks can do right away. First and foremost, it's important that if you haven't already, to contact Governor Kate Brown and let her know your opinion that you don't want to see new operations coming into our state without proper rules and regulations in place. I think that's sort of an easy ask. And it's something that anybody can do. You can contact her by phone or contact her by email. But it's really important that she hears from Oregonians that this is not the kind of agriculture that we want to see for the future of our state. Secondly, I think that there's going to be a big push to continue to educate Portlanders about, and I shouldn't just say Portlanders, really all Oregonians, about the threats of these kinds of operations to the things that we really value about Oregon, so clean air and clean water. And there, through this education process, there's always going to be opportunities to weigh in on the permitting of new facilities and make individual voices heard about, you know, what our state agencies should or should not be permitting. And so by following friendsoffamilyfarmers.org, www.friendsoffamilyfarmers.org is a local group that watchdogs these things. You can kind of stay up to speed on the various facilities that might be coming down the pipeline. That's a great way. But then beyond that, you know, there's going to be plenty of public education opportunities throughout the summer to learn more about this issue. If I can just do a plug right now, there's going to be a information and cheese happening on May 30th at the Holocene from 5:30 to 8:30. We're going to be having a great conversation with three cheesemakers talking about scaling up while remaining, while keeping our values sort of in, you know, at the forefront, and what it means to produce cheese in an ethical way in the state. So that's one example here in the next week that folks can plug into and sign up to learn more at the friendsoffamilyfarmers.org website.
Well, it's interesting to me that one of the handouts that I got from you shows all the groups that are working on this together, and they include, besides Friends of Family Farmers and Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Columbia Riverkeeper, Friends of the Columbia Gorge, the Oregon Chapter of the Sierra Club, the Humane Society, Humane Oregon, Food and Water Watch, Center for Food Safety, Center for Biological Diversity, and the Humane Society of the United States. So this is really a broad-based coalition, and it's not just food groups, it's not just environmental groups.
Exactly, and that's what's so exciting, is that this is the first time where we're seeing coalitions coming together, or this coalition coming together with groups from a variety of interests to work on this issue, because they see this as a growing threat to our state. And it really is, and you know, to have the Humane Society working with family farm groups, like that's pretty powerful. And so I think that says a lot, that folks in Oregon want to ensure a future of agriculture where pasture-based producers are able to thrive, and that these large-scale polluting industrial farms are not welcome into our state.
Well, one last question for you, Kendra. You grew up on a dairy, right, in Wisconsin. I just wonder how your experiences growing up in a dairy inform you in now, as you help lead the struggle to slow down, if not stop, industrial dairying.
Sure. I grew up on a family dairy farm in Michigan, and I was I sort of grew up. My very formative years were when we were having sort of the dairy crisis of the 80s, where it was kind of this mentality of you get big or you get out. And my family, actually, we chose to sell our dairy because we couldn't. The milk prices were so staggering low that we were unable to make enough money to pay our basic expenses to have a dairy operation. And our facility was quite small. It was I think we had about 120 cows at any given time. But that all being said, I think your question about how this sort of informs what I do today, you know, these facilities, when they come into our state, they undermine local producers. And so you have these mega operations that come in and they're able to flood the market with liquefied milk. And because of supply and demand, a lot of the milk prices will fluctuate as in response to added milk to the milk market. And when milk prices fluctuate, what we'll see a lot of times is the milk prices will go way down, and then the family farmers, like my dad, can't survive. They can't weather sort of that economic storm. And so when a lot of milk comes on the market, milk prices go down, a lot of family farmers go out of business, and then you'll see milk prices bounce back up again and mega dairies get even bigger. And so for me, I see the fact that Governor Brown is opening the door for these mega dairies to come into the state. She's really putting family farmers sort of at threat. And when we were working on the task force 10 years ago, we had I think it was like 370 permitted dairies in the state. Now we're down to 228. So we're losing our family dairy farms, and we're losing them quickly, and we should be working towards supporting family-scale agriculture in the state, not rolling out the welcome mat for industrial factory farms.
And I'm really glad, Kendra, that you've been working so hard on this for so long, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, and thank you for having this topic. It's an important one, Barbara.
Sure. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. We've been talking with Kendra Kimbarauskas, who's the Chief Executive Officer for Socially Responsible Agricultural Project, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, I'm taking the day off, but we'll be rebroadcasting an interview with Steve Early, author of Refinery Town, about Richmond, California. And then on the following Friday, June 2nd, we'll be doing a special Locus Focus commemorating the first anniversary of the oil train derailment in Mosier, featuring Dan Sears with the Columbia Riverkeeper and Arlene Burns, who's the mayor of Mosier. On Monday, June 5th, we premiere my new radio documentary, Sacrifice Zones, about the efforts to turn the Pacific Northwest into a fossil fuel export hub. My engineer is Sam Parrish. I'm Barbara Bernstein. So thanks for listening, and we're going to go out with a little bit of music by the Incredible String Band.
Straight from the shoulder, I think like a soldier. I know what's right and what's wrong.
He knows what's right and what's wrong.
I am the original discriminating buffalo.